Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. Man, oh man. What a weekend. The last couple of days have been something else for me. Tonight on the show, we got a lot to get to. Kevin Kleen's got an update on the homeless millionaire, and he said that I can play this tonight. I've been waiting to find out how this story was going to play itself out, because I know Kevin was looking for him. And it was only a matter of time before they connected, based on the high-profile nature of this story. So we're going to find the answer out to that this hour. Did St. Louis inspire the TV show Golden Girls? Can you believe that? There's a story KSDK did on it, so we may talk about that. And next hour, we're going to hook up with our friend Drex. Yes, love hooking up with Drex. So we're going to connect to Canada and North America together when we talk about, oh, who knows. I think Drex keeps hurting himself. That could be something that comes up. Seems to happen a lot. So I feel like this is the right time to share this story with you, and I thought about saving this for the weekday and maybe not doing it tonight, but I felt like, you know, let's just do it tonight. It's kind of a sad story, and on Friday I had to put my dog down. It was very difficult. So I'll just tell you this story. Why not? Anyone that's gone through this, you know, it's terrible. It's really one of the worst things you have to do as a pet owner. I mean, I could do just about anything, but this is really one of the worst. So I would say about a year ago, and it's weird, it's almost a year ago to the date, he started to have these little seizures, and I didn't know if he'd recover from it because he was a little bit old at the time, 12 years old, started having these seizures. And you read these things online that talk about how, well, once they have this, this is probably likely going to do this and this and this, and it's never good. They always have the doom and gloom. And I thought, oh, this might be the end of the line for my little pup. And I started preparing for this last year, and it was a difficult time for me, at least, because this pup I've had for a long time. It was before we were married. I adopted him from a no-kill shelter in Ohio. He was the type of dog that no one wanted. He was there for about 2 years. And they thought that this dog was going to be there for the entirety of its life in a cage, only getting out for a little bit of time here and there, and that's all the dog would know. I started doing some work with that shelter because the radio station I worked for became involved, and we wanted to help them out when it comes to fundraising and adopting animals. And I got to know a lot of the different dogs there, and I knew I wanted to adopt a dog, and they were telling me about this one that they thought would never be able to find a home. So I wanted to see this dog, and he was intimidating. He would sit there, and he was like all muscle, 55 pounds of all muscle, pit bull, no ears. The humane officer who found this dog tied to a tree said he weighed about 20 pounds at the time, on death's door, skin and bones, didn't have the strength to even stand up on its own, infested with, you know, anything that a dog that's outside tied up for a long period of time would be. And they got this dog, and they didn't know if this dog would survive, but he did. He started to get his health back. They couldn't save his ears. They were too mutilated, and they had all these, bugs and, you know, gross stuff. So he basically had these just holes on his head, scary-looking pit bull with holes on his head. Eventually, they nursed him back to health. You know, 55 pounds is a healthy, 60 pounds is where he was the last time I weighed him last week. And I loved him, absolutely loved him. He was one of those dogs that were super intimidating, but when you got him out, he was just a little lap dog, little lover boy. So I said, you know what? I'm going to give this dog a chance. And I'm glad I did. So he was about 4 years old when I adopted him. And for the last year living here in St. Louis, it became a little bit more tough for him. Things were not always coming easy to him anymore. I noticed that he didn't really want to go on walks. What we do is we'd get like to the end of the block, and I can tell he was pretty much all worn out. You know, little things like that, you can start to see the aging going on. And luckily, he stopped having those seizures. I mean, he had a couple of them in a short period of time. That was a really big scare. But I think he only had one other one. And I didn't witness it directly, but I'm pretty sure he had one because he was acting the same way he did after he came out of the seizure. One time after that. And everything was great. He traveled well, good with my son. And he was a right there, loyal dog, right next to you. Anytime you wanted him, he'd be right there. He was also one of those dogs that if he heard something going on in the kitchen, he'd come take a peek to make sure there wasn't something on the floor for him. He was someone that would, you know, never barked. He was one of those dogs that just never barked. The only time he would bark is if the doorbell rang or someone knocked, and that was it. Never any other time. So he was perfect in that sense. Just loved to get rubbed and back rubbed and belly rubbed. And yeah, in the last month or so, you noticed a couple of changes and you knew it wasn't good. And this is the first dog I personally owned. My family always had dogs, but I was never involved in this end-of-life process. So I wasn't looking for the signs like my dad would when I was living at home, you know? A couple of the things I started to notice is he really had a hard time getting up and down the steps. Not a couple of steps, that was not a problem, but he slipped a few times going down into the basement. So he would sit at the top of the stairs and give me that look. And I'd carry him down if he wanted to be down with us, if we were playing or whatever. You know, my son's got a little playroom in the basement, or I got a computer down there. I'd do some recordings or whatever. And he just always wanted to be by me. You know, he was, I think, always appreciative that someone gave him a chance. And, you know, I'd carry him down, and that was good. And it got to the point where he had a hard time getting down the two steps. And in the last couple of weeks, his diet changed. He just would not eat his regular dog food. It went from one day was fine to the next day he started eating slower to the next day just didn't want to eat his dog food. And I know that's a bad sign. I tried to find anything for him that he would put in his mouth and eat. And he was a junk food eater. So hot dogs, I'd make, you know, beef patties up for him. He'd love that. Bacon, all the things that you shouldn't be feeding dogs. All these things that I later find out from my vet. He said, well, if your dog had heart issues, this would have killed him the way you're feeding him. So we know it wasn't his heart. It's a little bit scary to think that, you know, I could have been the reason for that part of it. So it got to the point where when the eating changed so much, I brought him in and finally got him checked out. And he started to get some fluids in his legs. It was really weird. He started, like, his legs started chunking up. And he was just, you know, for a while there, he was just slow. He wasn't necessarily someone that looked like he was, you know, sick or anything. He was just slower. And I thought, okay, he's 13 years old now. You know, he's someone that had a really rough couple of first years of his life. Who knows what happened to him then? So that's expected. You know, 13's a pretty good age. And it's, you know, nothing to shake off, you know. Well, when I got him to the doctor earlier last week, she immediately knew she would feel him. And, you know, he was standing there and they'd feel his belly. And she said that she believes he has some masses or tumors or something internally. And she says, I'm very certain of this. She said, what we could do is get an X-ray, but it's just going to tell you that this is what's going on. And at 13, do you really want to put him through surgery? And I said, no, I knew. You know, when I went to that vet, I knew before we got there what she was going to say. But when she said it, it was really difficult to hear. We scheduled for Friday his last appointment, That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. I'll spare you the details, but you walk into the vet and you don't want to make eye contact with anyone because you know you're going to start tearing up. Kind of like I'm doing right now. So we go through the end of life and you get home and you're holding the collar and the leash and that's it. And you start thinking about the routines you've had over the last, you know, decade. 5 o'clock comes around and you think, oh, we got to feed Gotti. You can't help it. You go to bed at night and you think, oh, do we let the dog out? Or you don't see him for a while and you wonder, where is he? Until you remember. It was a very tough weekend. So I just wanted to share that with you. I love my dog. And my five-year-old's already asking when we're getting another one. He's the first thing. He said, oh, I really miss Gotti. When are we getting another dog? And you start to think that. It's weird. You think that. You think about it for a moment, and then you're like, I just can't. You think about how much you miss it, you know, having a dog around, but you just can't bear the thought because you can't replace that one. It's tough. Well, he doesn't understand, but, you know, being five, maybe it's a blessing for him that he doesn't understand. Well, thank you for letting me share that story with you. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. So sorry I got a little emotional there, but I couldn't help it. I'm still, you know, trying to get over it. It's a couple of days now past, but I'll tell you that it was not easy. Let me give you the phone number here. It's 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And I got a would-you-rather situation because this will help me distract. There's a would-you-rather situation. Now, we all know the story of the homeless millionaire, and there is an update on the homeless millionaire. I'm so excited to share this whole nother story with you in a moment. But we know the story. He's the man that's a millionaire living on the streets of St. Louis because he wants to. You know, he's got the money. He doesn't have to live the way he does, but he wants to. All right. Now, let's look at the opposite. Would you like to work 100 hours a week? No time to vacation, no time to take off for your family. You're going to be sleeping at your work, basically so dedicated that's the only way you know how to live. Would you rather work 100 hours a week, breaking your back, or would you rather be homeless and happy? Which one? 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Because I got a story of each of those for you. How about we start with Kevin Colleen's whole nother story?
Hey, Gary Schaefer, are you down there?
Is that the best you can yell?
I know, I'm getting old. Hey, Gary.
Gary Schaefer, are you there?
It was back in September when St. Louis Alderman Joe Vaccaro and I were yelling into a Maplewood Creek trying to find his old friend Gary Schaefer, for whom Vaccaro says he had helped set up a bank account with the dying mother's money worth about $1 million. The search turned to Kirkwood, where many said they had seen him in the past on a blue bicycle, and he never asked for money.
Every time anybody wants to give him money, he will say no, thank you, and he just wants to be left alone.
He stays down about 100 yards away from here on a picnic table and sleeps there sometimes during the day.
But there was no sign of Gary Schaefer in the area for weeks until he turned up in a local care facility and agreed to an interview.
I'm tight. I'm cheap, if that's a good word for it.
You're a wealthy man.
But I don't see it that way.
But people would say, why is he living on the street under a bridge when everybody's out there in the rat race trying to make money to pay their mortgage? It's like, is it better out there?
You answered the question yourself. Everyone is working their ass off trying to get even where I'm willing to take the disadvantage of not being...
Were you happy living on the streets?
Yes, I was.
What was happy about it? What's it like to have that freedom?
That's it. You just answered the question. You have freedom. And I don't have to get up and go to work. And other people do, even yourself.
I mean, most people, they can't even go on a camp out without wanting to get back to their home and take a shower and sleep in their bed.
Well, I have girlfriends.
Schaefer admits he did eat food out of trash cans from time to time, but he denies what the alderman said, that he likes to take a spot of turpentine for his health. With the winter approaching, I ask him if he was relieved he wouldn't be out on the streets.
It's not going to be so bad as you think, you know.
Do you want to get back on the streets?
Yeah, that's why I'm in here. I'm trying to get out.
Born free as the wind.
As I was getting ready to leave the care facility, the nurses were putting in a movie called Born Free about the lion Elsa. A room full of other patients in wheelchairs were watching, but Gary Schaefer is still able to walk, and the nurses say he likes to walk a lot.
And beauty surrounds you.
With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Still astounds you.
Wow.
Each time you. How about that? Kevin Killeen finally found Gary, the homeless millionaire. Now, I got a text message from Kevin Killeen tonight, and I messaged him and said, I love this story and the conclusion of this story. So this is what Kevin said. He's 84 years old, and he's starting to kind of want to retire from being homeless. He's got his girlfriends out there. How about that? But then I asked him, do you really believe he doesn't sip turpentine? Because that was one of the more memorable parts of the story. And this is what Kevin mentioned to me. I was just going to tell you, the alderman says Gary wanted to call me so he could correct his answer that he does drink it. But I got too busy to call him back. How do you reach Gary anyway? It's so hard to find him. Does he have a cell phone now that he's famous? The homeless millionaire. So would you rather work 100 hours a week, break your back, but, you know, have everything you need provided to you? In fact, probably have more than you need. But still, it's just in you. It's in your blood, your DNA that you're going to be working 100 hours a week. Or would you rather be homeless and happy, knowing that you could grab food out of a trash can, sip a little turpentine, and have your girlfriends out on the street, just as happy, but with no obligations in the world, all the freedom to do whatever you want. 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Because there's someone very famous that's telling you vacations will kill you. This famous person works over 100 hours a week, and he is famously working himself to death. And I don't know if I would switch places with him, even if I could. I'll tell you about him in a second. Let me go to Charles, who's calling in from St. Louis. Hey, Charles.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning. I was enjoying your shirts, shining shoes for a buddy of mine, you know, so that I could have some money, you know, and, you know, that's what I was doing, actually, when I was listening to you.
Oh, wow. Shining shoes this late at night.
Shining shoes to make some money because I'm broke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is a very good question because of the fact that I've been homeless a number of years myself in Phoenix, Arizona, Dallas, Texas. Born and raised in San Luis, was in the military, Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. Was on guard duty when Martin Luther King got killed down in Memphis, and we had orders not to leave the base because we were on military standby. Mm. I called my girlfriend in Dallas at that particular time. Her name was Daisy. And I called her, and she said, well, you can't come in. We can't go out tonight. I said, girl, I don't know what you're talking about. It's been 2 months for me to even get a date with you. I'm coming to Memphis. And I'm coming to Memphis. So, you know, that was the beginning of my downfall. Mm. You know, actually it was, you know, because of the fact that when I went AWOL from the Marine Corps in 1968, April 1968. I was AWOL for about 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go back to the base at NATTC, Navy Air Technical Training Center, where I was an aviation structure mechanic. You know, that's what I was going to school for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I passed everything. But after I got back to Memphis, they slapped me on the hand for being AWOL because of my first time getting in trouble. Then they sent me home on leave. Sent me home on leave that April. I get home. I run into my old teenage buddies, and I got a pocket full of money. We're from the ghetto, and they're poor and everything. So I'm treating them. I'm the big shot. I'm treating them. So after that, we got drunk and buying whatever we wanted. I was buying whatever they wanted.
Mm.
And they were in a car, and I messed around and got real drunk because of not drinking, you know, for that 4 or 5 months when I was in training and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got waken up. I was awakened by the St. Louis Police Department in the backseat of a stolen car.
Okay.
The guys that ran off. But back to the deal as far as wanting to live on the streets with $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, I think I wouldn't want to be homeless with $1 million, because I would be maybe trying to put the money somewhere to help other people, you know, that were sicker than me. Because there's a lot of sick people out there on the streets, you know, mostly because of drugs and alcohol and basically mental illness,
mm-hmm.
mental illnesses, you know, because they started throwing people that were sick out of the hospitals,
yeah.
all around the country. You know, this is our government doing that to us. But anyway, that's a hard question, you know, because I worked 90 hours too when I was doing abatement with mm-hmm. an abatement company, clearing out asbestos in different
okay
different areas. But you know, for me, that's a very, very, very hard question, because I don't like sleeping on cardboard in the concrete.
Well, even this time of year, it's terrible to be outside.
Say, man, look at this time of year when it's raining, you know, and you're trying to cover up and stay dry. Just even trying to find somewhere to lay your head is very, very difficult.
Charles, how old are you?
I'm 70 years old.
70 years old.
70 years old, yes, sir.
Okay. And this homeless millionaire is 84, so he's got 14 years on you, and he's living outside because he prefers it.
Hey, man, I took my hat to the buddy. I took my hat to him, you know, because I don't even have anybody in my family that believe me any money like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm looking for, you know, I'm working right now at a temp service. Pro Logistics out at Vijon,
yeah.
You know, make it 9:50 an hour, 2:30 to 11.
Yeah.
I have to still work, but, you know, just got my apartment in April, coming from the little shelter downtown on 13th Street in April.
You spent a lot of time in shelters?
Yeah. Quite a bit.
Mm. Where are you staying tonight?
I have an apartment on the north side.
Okay.
On
good.
Anderson and Newstead.
Okay.
You know,
good.
And, yeah. I do have a place, and I'm very, very happy to have it, you know, because it's terrible out there in the streets.
Yes, it is.
You don't know who to, you know, but if the guy is satisfied with it, you know, I say if that's what he want to do.
Yeah.
Let him do what he wants to do, you know, because...
That's the thing, Charles. You know, happiness looks different to just about everyone, doesn't it?
Right. Yes.
All right,
yes,
we gotta run, but thank you, Charles, for sharing your story.
Okay, man. And it was a whole lot more. I had to cut it off. You know, I'm not trying to take up all the time.
Call in some other time, you know, then. I'd like to hear it.
Okay.
Right.
I certainly will, sir.
Have a good night.
And your name is what again, sir?
Ryan Recker.
Okay, Mr. Rick. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know what we're going to have to do? If there's a way to measure this, which I don't think it is, a lot of radio shows, they brag, oh, we're the number one show in town. I got to be number one, and people that don't know who they're listening to. I get that all the time. What's your name again? This is Overnight America, KMOX. Now, I'm glad Charles called in. So let me ask this question to you. This is the way we set it up. We know the story of the homeless millionaire. Kevin Colleen just did a great follow-up to it. He's 84 years old. His mother, when she passed, put everything into his name, which is roughly about $1 million worth of assets. So a guy's got some money in the bank. But he decides that it's better to live on the street. Why get into the rat race of life when you can just live on the street? You know, it makes me wonder, is there any interest accumulating? How long has this money been accumulating? Because if you have $1 million in the bank, even with some interest on it, I mean, he's probably got a lot more by now, right? And what could you live off of? And okay, so he just wants to do, that's how he wants to live. Sip a little turpentine here and there for his health. And for some people, that's what happiness looks like. And it's weird because happiness looks different to just about everyone. One person's happiness is another person's misery, you know? Because I wouldn't want to live on the street. Which begs the question, would you rather live on the street, be homeless, but happy? Or would you rather work about 100 hours a week, nonstop, always in demand, high pressure, but you have a lot? I mean, you have more than you need. Everything's taken care of. That's Elon Musk's story. Here's the phone number. Which one would you rather be? 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. So here's Elon Musk's story. Says in the most recent interview to CNBC, he says vacations will kill you. Yeah, he works about 100 hours a week, at least over 100 hours a week. And he says that to successfully build any startups, like he's doing with Tesla and some of these other ones, you have to work 100 hours a week, and that hasn't changed. In 2018, Musk said he was sleeping on the Tesla factory floor in an effort to catch up on production for his Model 3 cars, which is starting to turn things around. There's some positive notes that are coming from that company. But, you know, it's not easy. Anytime someone tries to create an auto company, it normally fails. You've seen so many of them. It's very difficult to keep up. One person said he didn't have time to shower or go home. That's how much he worked. I mean, you're kind of living homeless at that point, right? I mean, the guy's a billionaire. He's probably got an awesome home with the top end everything, more than anyone could ever need. And there he is, without showering, living and sleeping on the floor of his office at the plant. Kind of living like a homeless guy to begin with. He says, I don't believe people should experience hardship while the CEO is like on vacation. So he feels like he owes it to all the people. He says, you know, until this company is successful and things are going really well, I don't think they need the CEO going off and doing an exotic vacation while they're all struggling. So he wants to be there with them. Musk said he's only tried to take off a handful of times that he can remember. Both times he could think of ended terribly. In 2015, Musk said that he had only taken off twice in more than a decade, and both times were problematic. So the first time I took off, the orbital science rocket exploded and Richard Branson's rocket exploded the same week. The second time I took off, my rocket exploded. Lesson there, don't take time off of work. Another time he took off was for his honeymoon. Okay, he's flying to, I think it was Australia, and they're in the plane. And while he was in the plane, the executives were not pleased with the way he was leading his company, which was X.com. That's what turned into PayPal. You know, that's where he got a ton of his money, was PayPal. So while Musk was on the plane, executives delivered a letter of no confidence to the company's board, pushing Musk out as CEO and replacing him with Peter Thiel. That's a whole different story there. But one of the more dramatic ones is as soon as he found out, he went back immediately to try to take care of that business. So he didn't even take a vacation. Basically, his only vacation was on that plane he was taking to vacation. Well, eventually him and his fiance got to go on that honeymoon they really wanted to go on. So they get to their destination in South Africa, and he contracts
malaria after two hospitals misdiagnosed him. He said he came very close to dying. So his lesson is, if I'm going to die, it's going to be on the floor of my Tesla building. It's not going to be from malaria in South Africa. Now, keep in mind, I think he grew up in Africa. So that's he's an immigrant to this country. Elon Musk is someone that loves this country so much and saw all the opportunities that he could make here for himself, that he became a citizen of the United States, created all these companies. Revolutionary, really. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about a modern-day Henry Ford or a Tesla or an Einstein, not Einstein, but like Thomas Edison, the ones that are doing some really amazing things. He is the guy for this generation. It's really remarkable, his vision and what he's been able to do with his money and back it up, because you don't see that all that often. So many people doing so many different things. But he's the guy that's going to sleep on the office floor, work over 100 hours a week, and he doesn't want his employees seeing him taking time off, because he's afraid that would give the wrong message. So you have an Elon Musk nonstop working around the clock, so much so that he won't go home to shower, versus a homeless man in here in St. Louis, lives in Kirkwood, Gary, 84 years old, has $1 million+ in the bank, purposely is happy living on the street. Which one would you rather be? Happy and homeless? Work 100 hours a week, billionaire, but nonstop work. You can't even enjoy any of it. 314-436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America. All right. What would you rather be, the homeless millionaire but happy living on the street because that's the way you prefer it? Or would you rather have all the obligations and the weight of the world on your shoulders, running multiple companies? You're spending so much time you don't even have the ability to go home and shower. You're sleeping in your office. Let me get to Patrick over in D.C. What's going on, man?
Well, could you imagine a president-elect taking the oath of office and then stating that we will not dance, we will not feast, we will not party until we feed the hungry, until we house the unhoused. And we'll come back in a year and see how well we did, and we did good, then we'll have our balls, then we'll have our great dinners. But that's not what we're about.
No. You know, Patrick, I thought you were going to say, could you imagine a president that says they're going to sleep at the office? And I thought, that's kind of what they do. It's on the White House and set up. But they don't spend a lot of time there. It seems they're always out doing something else. All right, so you're right. We have a lot of other problems out there. And, you know, all the presidents, they go gray, and it's for a reason, because, you know, they're working. They just can't solve
it's
all the problems.
It's not from the good vodka, right?
No, the politics can't. You know, from the president's level, I don't know if he's going to ever be able to solve some of the local issues that each individual city has. I mean, that's where you find some of these cities like you're in the very well Democrat run. You know, you see the majority of the problems happening in those areas that predominantly a Democrat has been in office or has been mayor for pretty much your entire lifetime. You see these issues start to rise, at least in the larger cities. Smaller cities don't seem to have those same problems. You know, mid-sized to smaller cities. It's really strange. It's only the large cities that have those problems.
Well, not exactly. As I go tour the Mid-Atlantic, yes, the small cities do have their homeless problems. And as a matter of fact, because they are small-type cities, well, we're talking about, let's stick with Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania small towns have a high homeless problem. It's amazing to see. It's very sad.
No, I mean, I'm sorry, I should elaborate. I don't mean just not necessarily just the homeless problem. I find that a lot of these smaller cities that are run by Democrats, they do just fine financially. They can at least get along with their city council. They can balance a budget. They can do all of these things. Like they have pretty much their affairs in order. If you don't agree with them politically, at least they got their affairs in order. Larger cities run by Democrats for the past decades and decades and decades and decades, you always see them having financial issues. Nothing's in order. They're always bickering and fighting.
Yep, they do that bickering and fighting, that's for sure. You know, life is political, the taking of what is mine for yours. And that's how it starts off with, you know. How do we share with one another? Because this is now going into the season, right this month, we're going to talk about Thanksgiving and sharing with one another. It's a lot happens so fast, and we pay attention to these big things that we can't even put our hands on.
Yeah.
While we could help what's right at hand and really make a difference there. But initially, when you were speaking of Elon Musk and people coming to this country, isn't it interesting also, would you say that we are blind to our own and our own accomplishments that we can make, and others who come here to this country see those opportunities and they're not blinded to it. They just go right through it. They succeed. And they can tell you, I came from this country, you know, I had nothing, and, you know, I came here, and now my daughter, she's going to a university, and I work real hard. You know how they talk about their accent.
Oh, I know exactly. Just let me tell you a quick thing, because I do a show on Saturdays here that talk about family businesses, and you hear about the different immigrants that came to this country, had, you know, no one, you know, they basically had a family member here that would sponsor them. They would move to St. Louis, and they'd try to get a job somewhere, but they end up starting their own business. The one that we heard this past weekend was Setley Jewelers, which is a family-owned business. And he talked about his dad. After he came to this country, he was a jeweler, but the way he traveled through St. Louis, he had to get from point A to point B, and he didn't like going through the side streets, so he'd walk through the factories. Like, you just go, instead of going around the block, you just go right through the different factories and floors. And while he was doing that, he was talking to people, and he was soliciting business, which ended up helping him start his own jewelry business. So all the people that he solicited to while walking through these factories, because he didn't want to go the long way, that's how he started his business. That's many, many, many decades later, still flourishing. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It is amazing that they have that. They have something in them that they see the opportunities.
Oh yeah.
And where we can be blinded to the opportunities.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They see those opportunities. You're right.
And so I did want to call in as I was listening and bring that point up, and hopefully we will not be blinded by the opportunities and the accomplishments that we could make for other people. That's for sure.
Yeah. So how's DC doing in the celebrating department?
Well, our moment in the sun is, you know, is going to be over when the sun comes up, as a matter of fact. You know, this was our moment, the moment for the people, where, you know, I was able to go just say, you know, hey, Congress, hey, Prez, you know, sorry about this, but this is our moment, you know, go away. But our moment will, you know, will diminish come tomorrow, and it'll be back to the old stuff.
So was there a parade?
Yes, right, and we get to do our parades right down Pennsylvania Avenue and Constitution Avenue, just like all the big parades.
Ah, so you get the parade. No one noticed because they're just used to traffic being that slow and no one getting around anywhere.
Except we were happy. Everybody had red shirts on and Washington National caps on.
They were happy and not upset. Okay, how many people show up for a World Series parade in D.C.?
I think maybe, what did they say, 80,000?
Oh, good. That's a lot of people. Wow.
That's a lot of people, yeah, come from all over the area. So it was the stadium plus who showed up. As a matter of fact, I thought it was pretty interesting that, you know, they had people go into the stadium itself for a watch party.
Yeah.
And not only did they do it there, but they did it over at the arena where the Wizards and the Capitals play.
Huh. Interesting.
So I thought that was kind of festive, too. But it brought everybody together to remember that we're a hometown. We're people who need to help other people who are in need. And we just can't walk around with this argument in our heads that we hear on the radio because of the political fight.
Yeah. All right, so I'll ask you the question, the one that I was asking when you called in. Would you rather work 100-plus hours a week? You have no time for anything, no family, no vacations, no nothing. You're living at work. You're not showering. Or would you rather be happy and homeless?
Oh, I have a shower at work, and I'll live at work. And there's a little microwave, you know, and I can stay at work for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And you know, my life is my work many, many times. So you can make yourself miserable on the street, and you can make yourself miserable at home in the office, but. Would I sleep at the offices? I've done it before. Sure, I've slept there when I was in high school. I was working, and it got snowed, and no one was able to make it in the morning, so I spent the night at work. And
yeah, that's one time. We're talking about every week, nonstop, week after week after week after week, every day.
I've done it.
Yeah. I've done it too. In radio, I think we all kind of like that opportunity where you have to stay late. There's some sort of major broadcast emergency and you're in and you're not allowed to leave and, you know, you're taking shifts and things like that. I think people in radio thrive for an opportunity where they could be the one to inform the public, you know, and be the one there for their community. I think that's kind of like a thing that most radio people have in common. They don't mind staying at the station if they have to. All right, hey, Patrick, thank you for calling in. Good to hear from you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and good evening.
Good evening, indeed. All right, coming up, did St. Louis inspire the Golden Girls? I don't know if this is a slow news weekend or if this is an interesting story, but is there a better theme song than the Golden Girls theme song? I don't think there is. It's Overnight America.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.